Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. Earlier this week, Coburg Police Chief Paul Vandegraaff presented his annual report for the past year to Town Council. Many stats were up. Number of calls, crime rates, reported crimes, number of mental health calls, drug poisonings, overdoses, break-and-enters all increased. The number of complaints against police were down, as were the times when officers used force. But things have changed in other ways. There were more public meetings called to answer concerns around the downtown and the Battelle Street neighborhood. Also, a recent police investigation into a stabbing led to the Coburg Safety Panel, a multi-agency body, being called in to close homes for unsafe conditions. So how are things really going for the Coburg Police Force? On today's show, the chief will explain many of the stats in the report, along with some of the shortcomings. He will also tackle the ongoing issue of drugs in Coburg. And you will find out what kind of a job he thinks he's doing on that front. I'm so pleased to have with me today the Coburg Chief of Police, Paul Vandegraaff. Welcome back to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having me once again, Rob.
What is your biggest takeaway from the 2022 annual report?
The great thing about our annual reports is it's such a tip of the iceberg review of the great work that the men and women of our organization, be sworn civilian and our volunteer groups, do in providing community safety. Obviously, it has all of those significant benchmarks that include crime rates and financial, all those types of things. But the increase in demand overall across the board is what really stands out clear and is sort of the thing in foremost in my mind. That's why when we're looking at how to construct the plan itself or the document, we really wanted that snapshot. I think that really showed, that infographic showed just the demands on our team.
Well, let's delve into that a little bit more. Let's explore, first of all, that 4.5% increase in the number of calls from approximately 10,000 calls to 11,000 calls. Can you explain what happened there and why the increase happened?
Yeah, it's difficult to put your finger on one thing, but what I will do is, I know a lot of the public want to talk about crime stats, and I think that's appropriate. We do see a pretty significant increase. Although our violent crime in itself is down, we did see some increases in certain reported crimes for service, specifically sexual assaults and level one assaults. When we see an increase in sexual assaults, oftentimes people default to, oh my God, I'm not a safe person because of these. We know that we don't have stranger type sexual assault in the previous year. Our sexual assaults are those that are known participants to each other. And we also know that when you do see an increase in reporting, it shows the good work that the support agencies in the community are doing to support our team. So when you have the great people at Cornerstone or the great people in any social service agency, that will help us make our victims feel emboldened and empowered to report. And when they report, we then take a victim-centered approach to move it forward. So that's one thing that we did see. We also did see a pretty significant increase in theft under 5,000. Part of that is some of the local trend in that those theft from motor vehicles. But another one is the being a 401 community. And we have seen a fairly regular large-scale thefts from the Walmarts, the Shoppers, the Rexalls, all of the different pharmacies. And they're in stealing those high-priced razor blades or those high-priced, which are in itself not a huge dollar value, but we did definitely see an upswing in that in 2022.
You already mentioned that there was a 15% increase in the number of mental health calls. What is it that attributed to? Is it one of those things when, you know, we have the MHART program in place? Is this the reason that we're seeing the increase?
Yeah, for sure. And that's a very simple criminological, if you will, or criminology of theory, in that when you create space for people to access service, you're going to have an increase in reporting. It doesn't necessarily mean you have an increase in that event. So our MHART team is really a second tier. They're following up on a lot of the calls for service. But in economic crisis, people are losing their homes. People cannot afford to get their homes. Maybe they're not getting the work they need. Coming out of the pandemic, the mental health of our populace, in my opinion, isn't consistent with everything being open and having all the festivals back in town. I still feel there is lingering effect for people who don't want to work, in the sense of they like the hybrid model. It became a better lifestyle, and now they're not working, or changes in that people don't need as many people in office spaces. So the issues around mental health are always concurrent, in that it's we also do know that there are significant people underserviced, and that's no fault of anybody. But there are, obviously, you look at any of the community living home, you look at Forecast, the county, Transition House, Cornerstone, there are underserviced populations. There are people who cannot access services when they need them. So if you have to wait 2 weeks to get into a mental health professional just to start the road to the road to ready, those 2 weeks falls on the shoulders of my team, and those are those impacts that we're seeing.
But is that really the case? I mean, if you talk to the hospital, they'll tell you that their mental health services, they now have more drop-ins, they have expanded those services. You talk to a Northumberland Community Counseling, and those who provide those services, they'll tell you that there's spaces and people are responding. Is that really the explanation in light of those things that are going on in the community?
Listen, I can show you wait lists say it all, and all the work that Northumberland Hospital does with their counseling is perfect, because it is that get somebody in within those periods of time. But to get into ongoing care, those wait lists don't talk about in-depth psychiatric appointments. Those are 6 to 8 months out, and that's the kind of intervention some people require. Ongoing treatment for a psychological disorder is not there. The family doctor situation across Ontario is obvious. As we know, many family doctors are that frontline mental health professional, and they're providing that kind of treatment and therapy at the outset. So yes, there's a lot of great work being done, but I sit on the board of Cornerstone, and the great work that team does, and we know that we could always service more. We know that the wait lists for youth at Rebound exist, and Nicole Woods doing a tremendous job in that transition from Carol Beauchamp at Rebound. But we know there are wait lists for certain lanes, not all lanes, but for certain lanes. And I'm not to discredit anybody who's doing that work, just it is what it is.
There are a series of stats in the report that are provided without any context. For example, you state there are 89 suspected drug poisonings. There was another 59 cases where naloxone was administered. There were 44 BNEs. Now, none of this means too much if we don't know about the previous trend. Why did you do this in the report?
So if you look at the report, when we talk about the amount of break and enters, or the amount, that is something that I've heard loud and clear from our community that they're interested in knowing. So when we look at our violent crime or our non-violent crimes statistics, we'll see that there are increases. So the infographic will show people that if it's an arrow pointing up, there's an increase and a decrease. I'm always very cautious about looking at any one particular number in an isolated year as to say what it is or what it isn't. However, is my responsibility is to report what the community raises to me. As everybody knows, I'm a very approachable police leader. And did they want to know how many break-ins are occurring? That's something that's important.
I don't think that's what we're talking about. What we're talking about is contextualizing these numbers, saying what was it like in 2021 or 2020 or 2019? In other words, right, that we can see the trends. you're giving us numbers, which is great. And you're showing the nice little graphics with the arrows up. And we know there's an increase, but by how much? And, you know, doesn't this then, I mean, when you say there's 89 suspected drug poisonings, well, how many was there the year before or the year before that? So that we get a better understanding of what's going on in the community. You're the chair of the board. In his message in the report says, quote, this represents transparency and accountability. But if there's nothing to compare to it, how are people supposed to judge? Is this really transparent and accountable?
Sure. So again, the annual report, like I said at the outset of this, is a tip of the iceberg. So this is a snapshot of what 22 looked like. We do provide that kind of detail every month at the Police Services Board. Those minutes and meetings are public. And in that, we do definitely contextualize year to year. I don't think we do a three-year trend, but we definitely do year to year, quarter to quarter. So for instance, in your case, and we do have this data available, and your point is well taken. So in 2021, we saw 58 break-in enters with a clearance rate of 26%. And this year we have 44. So a decrease in that, and our clearance rate is all but the same as 25%. So I get your point. And then drug poisonings, not sure if I even have that number in front of me, but I can tell you that that is a sudden increase. And the times that the naloxone are deployed by our officers are spot in time, I guess, to your point. I'm not showing it year to year, but that is definitely something as we move forward in future annual reports that we can definitely add to. I encourage everybody, though, to look at our our board meeting reports. It's actually one report. I know there's some of them that are really heavy. Just read the operational report. And you'll see that contextualized statistical recounting.
Why did this report include vignettes of service, stories from the front lines, if you will? Why did you do this? Because it's not been done before.
Yeah, this is something that our communications team and our senior command looked at. And this is a recognition of what our team does each and every day. And we do so much that people sometimes don't necessarily understand or put their minds to. So we did that in honoring some of our team, really is to recognize this is our service and this is their annual report. And we really, really wanted to highlight some of the great work being done individually.
And could you share the numbers that you found and how that relates to that particular context?
Yeah. So when you look at our, we don't have a lot of use of force reports or reportings. But when you look at those, that is probably relatively on a ratio basis representative of the community that is in front of us is what Code Brick looks like. So what that shows me is that when we are using use of force, definitely in a reduced number, our applications of use of and our use of force reports are down from the previous year. It shows that the multitude of people who we're dealing with, in fact, all but one are Caucasian individuals.
Let's talk about drugs. You say in the report you've arrested 13 people and seized all kinds of drugs and stopped $131,000 worth of drugs being sold. Now, that all sounds really impressive. But my question to you is, have you moved the needle? Are you winning the battle to control drugs in our community?
Let's see. Ronald Reagan started the war on drugs, right? I just want to put it into context. So that was 1980. So how are we doing on the war on drugs? What I can tell you is that, and this is really important, in that the fentanyl seized were potentially 2,200 overdoses that were prevented. Not deaths. Incidents. That's really good. A lot of work that goes into getting these search warrants together. People don't understand the amount of time and effort going in, and because we're actually using we are getting a judicial order to infringe upon someone's charter rights in the search warrant. So kudos to the team. Again, all the work going into getting this done. And for me to see that kind of cocaine, crack cocaine, crystal meth, and fentanyl off of our community, are we moving the needle? I'm going to say that if you've prevented potentially 2,200 overdoses, then the needle has moved. Are we in a drug-free community here? No. Is there an opioid epidemic across the country, if not North America? Yes. Is there one simple answer? No. So our team, work very collectively to get those people responsible for bringing drugs into our community and hold them accountable. I know there's a lot of misunderstanding, and I've been to two community meetings in the last 6 months where over 200 people at each one, and they're yelling and screaming at me for not doing enough about people sitting on the street corner smoking drugs. And I have to remind them, the federal government has indicated simple possession, and our federal crown is not proceeding with simple possession offenses. So my officers have no lane there other than to, hey, you shouldn't be smoking in a non-smoking building, technically. We still do the MHART, we still do the HART, we still connect to resources. But at the end of the day, the drugs are drugs. There is a decriminalization approach across the country, if definitely in Ontario. There is substance abuse issues that are foremost in our mind. We're going to talk about encampments. We're going to talk about safe consumption sites. All of these things are happening in towns across Ontario. So to say, did we move the needle or not? You know what? If we didn't do the work we were doing, I would say that the drug issue would be a lot worse. So the needle has moved.
Well, let's delve into this a little bit more deeply then. More recently, the Cobourg Police have held several other public meetings to deal with these concerns. One was in the Lions Center, and another was with residents of Battelle Street. How are you measuring the results of those meetings, and how can you show that there is a difference to the community?
Sure. So quantitatively, what we will demonstrate is a promise is made is a promise kept. So in both cases, visibility was the issue, was what we heard is the key thing that we could resolve. So we track the amount, we show the increased amount of foot patrols or directed patrols in those particular areas. We report on the crime. So there is another board report every month that hits the board report. It's called the Directed Patrol Initiative, which is the downtown. This came out of the Lions Center. And we also measure the value of those meetings in why we do them. So I've as chief have called both of those. That's been something that I've said, okay, there's enough going on. There's enough noise and rhetoric and anecdotally, whatever is happening. We are going to get in front of this. And I put myself as the sort of the front face. And when I get there, we get met with sometimes disheartened individuals. We get met with conflicting viewpoints on how drugs should, or drug users or encampments should be managed or not managed. Then in the latter meeting, we have a group of neighborhoods, individuals who are more concerned about one particular address and some of the actions that were happening there. But then again, it bled to a broader community thing. And what we hear constantly is the same type of stuff. So we've increased our visibility, we've increased our patrol, all measurable. We measure the amount of time spent, we measure the arrest, we measure the impact. We worked with the public, the Cobourg Safety Panel, which is the group of all of the various town departments. And it's an operational, so it's not a chief level. That's the operations level people at these committee meetings looking at these problematic residences. And then we collectively say who has the best angle to correct this. And more times than not, as we've seen, it's not police. It's bylaw, it's fire, it's health unit, it's building planning, the chief building officer. So that's the outcomes. The outcomes of this is that significant change, measurable, identified things have been done. So we've the health unit shut down an address. We've made sure that the other addresses are actually being used as their principal intention, meeting with the code, meeting with fire and electrical standards. We are dealing with a crime and criminal element in that. And what I hear from the community tells me that it's a value and that I get a lot of comments. Thank you. Can you do more? This is great, but what if? So that interaction and that collaboration with our community is that other piece, which in my opinion as chief is measurable, in that I say, I'm going to stand in front of you. And when I get four or five emails after the meeting that say, hey, chief, you shouldn't have had to eat and all that, that's nice to hear. But at the end of the day, I'm the person who sits in the chair responsible for community safety. And my job is to be available.
Let's talk about this community safety panel, because you've alluded to it. And I'm not clear, and maybe some listeners aren't clear, as to how you identify these buildings. I mean, is there some kind of, what is the process by which you decide?
It's easy. The model for the public safety panel, it was informal. We did it once before 351 John Street. I don't mind saying that address because it was actually our beta test for this. And what it is it's no different than the hubs or the situational tables that are very common. And what it is a group of community partners in that case coming together to bring a high acuity person. What we've done is we've taken that and really watered it down. So now we have all of those stakeholders I've mentioned at the table. And what we say is anybody can bring the issue to the table. I, as police, typically, as in the situational tables, bring most of the issues to the table. But it could be the chief building officer brings the issue to the table saying, hey, I got this problem address. They're just not listening. I've got some fire hazards. We've got garbage piling up, whatever the circumstance, with pest infestation. We come to the table, everybody shares their expertise, and then somebody leaves the table with the ball. And what that means is somebody can be the lead agency on how to manage this moving forward. In the case of 413 Division Street, it turned out it was brought because of when fire went there for a medical distress call, they observed some things they couldn't turn their eye to. And that everything started to work around it. And actually, the lead unit actually was the ESSA, the Electrical Standard Safety Authority, and the health unit, HKPR. They ended up being the ones that took the immediate action. So that's where that works, because we look at these community problems as being something that is more than crime. If we look at just the crime element, then we will constantly live in the world of criminal displacement, where I will throw everything at one street, throw everything at one house, all the uniforms, everything there, put up a CCTV camera, all of those things. The problem is just going to move somewhere else. Like, we haven't resolved the underlying issues of poverty, homelessness, addictions, mental health, and or the person just wants to be a criminal. Like, I there are people who aren't the other four who are drug traffickers or who are going to live in the criminal element. So what we try to do is look at it far more holistically to say, what is it that we can all bring to this problem for a longer term solution? Because if you're looking at my officers as being the ones to solve it, we will only solve it for today and tomorrow. We will not solve it for the long run.
Recently, we've seen action in regards to an encampment on the West Beach and removing that encampment, and also a number of complaints around homeless people being in various locations around Coburg. What has been the involvement of the police in this particular effort to resolve these issues?
Yeah, so this is exactly in the same line or venue of what we were just talking about. Encampments on private property fall squarely on my team. So we have somebody who puts up an encampment on private property. It's very easy. Our people show up and they would ask these people to vacate private property or be subject to a trespass. And generally these people move along without any issue. Public property is the complete and sole lane of the municipality and that of the municipal bylaw authority. We work in concert with them again at the public safety table, but we also work in concert with them in providing them and their staff safety should they require it. So in other words, just like in Peterborough. So when they have to attend the encampment for any particular reason, or if they feel that there or somebody else's safety could be at risk, our officers attend to provide that kind of safety. But as far as the day-to-day interactions and interventions in those encampments, that's something that rests squarely on the municipal bylaw. And that is demonstrated by council meeting on last Friday and to have conversations about how they're going to move forward with the encampments.
Were you involved in any of those discussions?
No, we were not. We were not involved in those discussions other than a preliminary understanding of where they are, who's at them. Is there anything that we needed to do in relation to that? We had a call for service over the weekend at a particular encampment, and our officers attended that place like they would any other place, provided the assistance that the individual required, and we moved along. So we haven't been involved in these in-camera conversations.
What are your goals going forward for 2023? What changes do you want to see?
2023 will begin with our our budget deliberations, which are complete internally. We'll get ready to present those to the board in the very near future, and then onwards to council. So our goals moving forward are to continue on our meeting our objectives in the strategic business plan as set by the board. We're drawing to the end of that particular strategic plan. So we got to look at those areas where we need to maybe heighten some attention. We will be looking at our staff. We'll be spending a fair amount of time in 2023 really dissecting what it is our officers are doing, how they're doing it, and are there efficiencies. We recognize the nature of the town, as I've said, the calls for service are increasing steadily. Staffing has been relatively consistent. There's been lots of turnover, but we've been consistent in our numbers. So we'll be looking at staffing allotments. We're going to be looking at obviously keeping our business center alive and thriving. And I'm working with some government to look at some opportunities for advocacy for some change to the federal and provincial acts that govern that. We are going to continue a robust attempt to create a very Coburg Police specific diversity, equity, and inclusion plan. And we're ready to launch our internal diversity census, which is a very robust project that we were lucky to get a grant from the provincial government on. So before we can determine what our plan needs to look like, we have to see what we are. And that's really, that's going to be, because it's not only asking our staff to identify what they are, but how they feel about inclusion. So these are going to be some touchy subjects. So we're going to move forward very collectively again with our associations. We work very closely here with all partners, but specifically internally. So moving forward, we're going to work with our board, try to provide the best service for our community, very robust responses to these types of social disorder issues that infringe upon people's right to be safe in their own space, continue to be present. Moving forward, we're going to be really looking at what are those issues. So we're going to continue the war on drugs to go back to an earlier point. We're going to continue on delivering robust, dynamic, enhanced patrols to those communities, wherever that community is that needs it. And again, I looked at the amount of complaints against our officers ever decreasing. We're going to continue to deliver a service that's second to none, as I understand it. And to look to the two officers who put their own lives in jeopardy on the weekend to save the life of another, that's the kind of vision and mission that I'm fortunate enough to lead a group with forward.
Chief, I want to thank you so much for your time today.
No problem, Rob. As always, it's a pleasure.
That was Coburg Police Chief Paul Van de Graaff discussing the 2022 Annual Police Report. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.